Good morning. May it please the Court. David Koch here on behalf of Mr. Jones. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please.
Very well.
We've raised a number of issues in this case, and subject, of course, to the Court's preference, it's my intention to start by focusing on the defect in the information, and then, time permitting, move on to some of the trial errors that we have alleged. The law, in terms of the sufficiency of the information, is well settled under yours, Vic, and the other cases. And it's clear that the state has to include all essential elements of the offense in the information. Under the liberal construction test, which we're under here since we raised it for the first time on appeal, the elements at least must be fairly implied from the language that's used. The crime we're talking about here is promoting prostitution in the second degree. It's not a complicated crime. It essentially has two elements. The defendant must knowingly advance prostitution. And we know from case law that had the state simply charged in the language of the statute, there would have been no issue here at all. But they didn't do that. Instead of
is the crime of promoting prostitution something that can be charged as an attempt? I mean, in other words, is that if they wanted to just charge attempt, could they have done so? And if so, do you happen to know whether the penalty would have been less?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not aware of anything that would prevent them from charging an attempt to commit this crime. I've never seen it, and I suspect I've never seen it because, as we know, even attempted activities fall under the definition of advancing prostitution. So usually I think they would go ahead and go for the greater crime, the completed crime, which is a Class C felony, rather than charge an attempt, which I assume would be a gross misdemeanor if they did that. But I've never seen
that. The reason I ask the question is because, you know, these defects in the information are so technical that it's sometimes hard for courts to, like, really, you know, like, we're not going to reverse this conviction because this word was weird. But so one of the things that I try to think about when I get these cases is, let's say that your client had been presented with the information and he was trying to make a decision about whether to even get a lawyer, whether or not to plead guilty. If what you're charged with, you see that you know you've been involved in some perhaps wrongful activity, and you're willing to accept a gross misdemeanor, but you're not willing to risk a felony, then it would make a difference, right? If they charged you with the misdemeanor and then tried to convict you of the felony.
It certainly could make a difference, and I mean, it could make a difference.
I'm being very hypothetical here.
You are, yes.
It's difficult to sometimes get a grip on this.
But I don't think you have to go there, quite frankly. You don't have to ask what are, you know, the potential hypothetical consequences here. Because under Kryorsvik, I mean, there's a prejudice part of it that's the second half, once you find that all the elements are fairly implied. But it seems like your questions are sort of geared towards what could be the potential prejudice here. And that's not part of the first prong of Kryorsvik.
No, it's just trying to understand why the rule is the way it is. Why do we care?
Well, the rule is the way it is because the defense should be given an opportunity to know exactly what the state has to prove in order to convict them, because it helps them prepare a defense. Okay, and that could either be a trial defense, it could be deciding to plead guilty.
So you could get all the way up to the eve of trial and think, well, they're just trying to prosecute an offense, an attempt.
You could.
We'll assign one of our less
potentially
collaborators here to
potentially defend. And then, you know, and I think that sort of, you know, boils down the essence of this issue. Can you charge somebody with a completed crime but tell them in the information that you really only need to prove that they attempted it in order to convict them? And that's what happened here.
In this case, are you saying, as most of the challenges to informations say, that there is a failure to state an element of the crime, or are you saying that the surplusage here, attempt, created confusion?
It's more than just confusion. I think you can sort of look at it both ways. They failed to assert an essential element of the crime, that being advancing prostitution, because they put the word attempt in front of it. That changes the element.
So that it's an attempt charge in this case, not a completed crime charge.
If you just go by the elements that they laid out, then yes. Okay. Of course, they're not calling it an attempt, though, in the information.
Okay. And with respect to State versus Smith, which you cite in your reply brief, and I assume the state has something to say about that in a few moments, How does that play into the analysis here?
I think the situation is analogous. Now, you know, State v. Smith involved a to-convict instruction. It didn't involve an information. But I think the principles apply across the board, because whether you're talking about a to-convict or an information, the rule is the same, and that is that it has to contain all essential elements of the crime. Mr. Smith was charged with conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree. The to-convict should have said that he agreed with others to commit the crime of murder in the first degree. Instead, what it says is that he agreed to conspire with others to commit murder in the first degree. And as the Supreme Court recognized, that's an important distinction. It was really telling the jurors all you need to find is a conspiracy to conspire, an agreement to conspire, which lessened the state's proof, and they reversed. And I think the same situation is here. You know, we have the crime that just requires advancing prostitution, which can involve attempted activities. It involves completed as well, but certain attempted activities. If you then put attempt in front of advanced prostitution, the consequence is very much like Smith. You have an attempt to commit attempted activities. Now, what does that mean? Well, it seems it would require very little evidence then to convict the individual. Typically, an attempt involves some sort of substantial step, not just mere preparation. But if you're telling them in the information that really all we need to show is an attempt to attempt, then perhaps mere preparation would do it.
So your position in this case is we don't even get to the second prong about prejudice.
That's correct.
Okay.
That it's the first prong is where we prevail.
But why isn't that deficiency you just articulated something that comes up later in the proceedings? It's not a deficiency in the charging instrument. It might be a deficiency when you ask for the elements instruction. It might be said, well, you can't get those elements now because you've locked yourself into something lesser than that.
Well, I assume it could have also been that. Defense counsel recognized this down below, or maybe recognized it but didn't do something. But had counsel acted on it down below, perhaps there would have been an argument that the state should have been held to an attempted crime, potentially a misdemeanor, based on the way that it was charged. So you could have had that argument happening later on. But the fact that it wasn't doesn't really impact the analysis under Kiorzyk, because it's clear under that case we can raise this issue that we've raised, focused on the information for the first time on appeal. So I don't think the two issues are mutually exclusive. Unless the court has any other questions about that. The other thing I'll say in terms of the trial errors that we've raised, you know, the state has responded to each of these by saying there's really no reasonable probability that the various mistakes, the IAC claims, or the evidentiary error by Judge Bradshaw had any impact because Mr. Jones was acquitted on count one. The only thing I'd say about that is I think the record shows a clear reason why he was acquitted on count one. The state went all out on count one. They wanted the most serious conviction they could get. They started with a Class C felony on that. They then amended it to a Class B, ultimately a Class A, human trafficking, which required some sort of fraud or force or coercion, and they simply didn't have it. Nobody alleged that that happened. None of the witnesses said that in any way Mr. Jones coerced or used fraud against the victim. That's why they acquitted on that. So simply because they acquitted on that doesn't mean that the other errors in the trial could have had no impact on count two, which would have been closer, I think, based on the evidence. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you. You have your rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. Amy Meckling for Respondent, State of Washington. I think that...
No, let me ask the first question.
Absolutely.
Here. Does this record show why the state put in attempt when it did the amended information?
The record does not show that.
Okay.
I mean, I certainly have an idea why that happened, just knowing how things are charged in my office, but that's
what the
record
I just want to know what the record says.
And I think that if this were your typical charge, I don't think that we would probably have the same argument, might not have an argument at all, that the defendant was provided adequate notice under Kiorzyk. But as your honors have been discussing, promoting prostitution in the second degree includes the inchoate offense. Attempted activities they're subsumed within the completed offense. And so what we're talking about here is not a missing element. We're talking about a word that was added to the element of advancing prostitution that the argument is that affirmatively misstated the elements in such a manner that he was deprived of the notice under Kiorzyk. But when the crime itself includes attempted activities, you're really talking about a superfluous word here.
Well, it's a superfluous word, yes. But it's the impact of that superfluous word which causes a problem. They could have said, this is a really bad promoting prostitution, and under that analysis, it probably wouldn't have made any difference. But here they said it's an attempt to attempt. And so the argument is that there's a problem. So address that. And you might also think about addressing State versus Smith as well.
Certainly. And I don't think that I believe Judge Becker asked about whether you can even charge someone with attempted promoting prostitution, and I don't believe you can. I mean, I suppose you could always we reduce cases to that quite often because I think it is a crime that someone can plead guilty to. I don't know that that's an actual offense, however.
Well, if you can plead guilty to it, I would hope it's a crime.
Well, I mean, it is, but we recognize sort of, you know, legal fictions all the time with attempted activities. It's sort of like there's some times in which an attempted assault sort of doesn't make any sense either. How attempt in this particular context, I mean, a criminal attempt is of taking a substantial step. And so if you take a substantial step, which is more than mere preparation, to the complete the crime of promoting prostitution, you have necessarily completed the crime of promoting prostitution. And so if you attempt to attempt, you're taking a substantial step toward taking a substantial step, and that's not a crime. How do you take a substantial step toward taking a substantial step? I don't think that's a crime under any scenario that he could have pled guilty to. In terms of State versus Smith, we're talking about a completely different context, and that's when the jury was provided a to-convict instruction that confused them. The court held that there was a danger that the jury was confused as to what it was they had to find in order to convict the jury, or excuse me, to convict the defendant. The jury confusion was the issue there. The state has to state all the elements in the to-convict instruction itself, and you can't rely on other instructions to clear that up. And it was confusing. But this is a situation where, and I think I'll go back
Isn't
to making
it analogous, though? I mean, in other words, we have here defendant confusion.
It is, except that you're not talking about the same standard. Under Kiorzovic, you're talking about a liberal interpretation standard, whether under any fair construction of the document, was he provided adequate notice. It's a very liberal standard. It's just
sure it is, but if you think that you're being charged with an attempt, you know, if the state charges you with, you know, attempted murder, and then you get to court and find out you're being prosecuted for murder, it's a It'd be quite a difference, wouldn't it?
I think so, but I don't. I think that in this case, I mean, he's told he's charged with promoting prostitution. He wasn't told he was charged with attempting anything. And when we charge someone with attempt, with criminal attempt, we charge them with the specific language that we're required to, which is that they took a substantial step toward completing the offense, and then we put attempted in the actual charging document itself. Obviously, this is not the standard for Kiorzovic, but I don't think there's any dispute here that he was confused about the nature of the charge that he was facing. I mean, that's pretty clear from the record. There's no confusion.
That's often the case, though, with a Kiorzovic
reversal. And I think that that just lends credence to the argument that any fair construction of this document made it clear that he wasn't confused by it, that he was given the notice that he was required to be given.
No. Well, I agree with you that this is just a plain old Kiorzovic application of whether there has to be a liberal construction because it's being raised for the first time on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, the question is it inadequate notice? And there are many cases where there's a, you know, it doesn't make sense because the case goes on and you see that the person has been tried and they've been tried for the crime and how could they not know? And nevertheless, because the information is defective, the conviction is reversed, and it seems to me that your argument is like, oh, that's not a good idea. That rule should be changed.
No, I'm not arguing that. I'm saying if you read this document, it says that he was on such and such a date, he knowingly attempted to advance the prostitution of the young lady. How can you be confused by that? I mean, he attempted to advance the prostitution. That's exactly what we accused him of doing, and that's the facts that we ultimately proved. That is the crime of promoting prostitution. I understand that attempt has some legal significance, criminal attempt has some legal significance outside of just the ordinary understanding of attempt, that if a layperson was reading that document, there would be, I believe, no confusion, because I don't think that the layperson understands the definition of criminal attempt. But that's what the attorney is for, and if you look at the state versus Can, where they, I believe it was the, it's an older case, so the charges were somewhat different back then. But I believe one of the issues on appeal was whether the state was required to charge Mr. Can under the lesser offense of solicitation to promote prostitution. I think that was the charge. And the court held that the state was unable to charge him with that because the facts by which you would prove a solicitation were the same as the completed offense, and therefore the state was required to charge under the completed offense, which is the more specific statute and not the general solicitation statute. I think that would be the case here. I don't know that the
what
state
the
could charge him
case?
With, excuse me?
What was the outcome of that case?
He was, the conviction was affirmed.
I see.
Yeah. I don't, that wasn't the, he had a similar argument about the sufficiency of the evidence, whether just merely discussing negotiating with someone to commit prostitution was sufficient, and that was another aspect that this case is relevant to this one because there's a sufficiency claim here too. But another claim that he made on appeal was that the state was required to charge him with the inchoate offense essentially, and we weren't able to because the more specific one covered the solicitation type activities. And I believe there's another case, I think it's Putnam, where the same situation was it was conspiracy. He was arguing the state had to charge him with a conspiracy to promote prostitution. And again, the court found any conspiracy that you involve yourself in to promote prostitution is actually the completed offense of promoting prostitution, and therefore the state has to charge you under the more specific promoting statute, not the conspiracy statute. So I'm not sure that he could have been charged with attempted promoting prostitution in this case. I mean, I recognize attempt's a little bit different than conspiracy and solicitation. But I think that under any fair interpretation of this document, the word attempt didn't alter the meaning in such a way that he was deprived notice. Under any fair construction, does the term knowingly attempted to advance prostitution deprive him of notice of what was going on here? And it's a very liberal standard, and I don't think that that's been met in this case to say that his conviction should be reversed because of that. And if Your Honors don't have any other questions, I'll just briefly mention Mr. Koch talked about the proof on count one, which is what the jury ultimately acquitted Mr. Jones on, being such that the jury didn't really have any choice but to acquit him on that, and therefore it doesn't really benefit the state much to argue that on his ineffective assistance of counsel claims, that the fact of the acquittal demonstrates that there's no reasonable probability the outcome of the case would have been any different. And I want to touch on that. I don't think that just because the jury did acquit, and because the likely reason that they acquitted is because the evidence of coercion or force was pretty minimal, doesn't mean that the jury's hands were tied and they had to acquit him, and therefore you can't say that there's no reasonable probability that the ineffective assistance didn't affect count two, which they did convict him on. Mr. Jones made essentially a halftime motion at the time of trial saying the state hadn't proven the coercion element of count one to the satisfaction to survive a halftime motion. And the court clearly found that there was enough. I mean, the victim in that case, Ms. Johnson, testified that she was afraid of what he would do to her family if she didn't stay and do what he had asked her to do. So while the facts were such that maybe the jury didn't find it beyond a reasonable doubt, and I don't think that's particularly remarkable that they didn't find that, I don't think that's the same thing as saying that their hands were tied and it was obvious that they were going to acquit him, and therefore that doesn't really demonstrate anything with respect to the other challenges. So in summary, I would just ask the court to find that under a liberal interpretation of the charging document, knowingly attempting to advance prostitution is the same as committing prostitution, when in fact promoting prostitution includes all attempted activities.
Thank you.
The state's position that there was no confusion here by Mr. Jones and therefore no error really, I think, conflates the two Kjorsvik prongs. Because, I mean, Kjorsvik's very clear in that it says, first of all, do the necessary effects appear in any form or by fair construction can they be found? That's the first prong. Second, if so, so that's if they can be fairly found, can the defendant show he was nonetheless prejudiced? That's where this whole question of confusion and so forth would come in. But you don't even reach to that if you're deciding the case under the first prong, which you should be in this case. But to the extent we have to show that there could have been some confusion, there could have been some confusion here. If you look at the statute for promoting prostitution in the second degree, 9A88080, you will not find the word attempt in there anywhere. But by including it in this information, I think it's very much like Smith. You have changed the language of the statute, and you've changed the meaning. to a far more inchoate crime than what the legislature had ever intended. And simply because there are some attempted activities that fall under the definition of advances prostitution doesn't mean that's the same thing as including the word attempt in front of advances prostitution in the information. Those are two very different things. Unless the court has any further questions of me, I conclude by asking you to reverse Mr. Jones' conviction.
Thank you.
Thank you.